Welcome to Chirosphere, where we talk about all things chiropractic and some things not so chiropractic. I'm Dr. Ray Foxworth, your host for Chirosphere and CEO of ChiroHealth USA, the network that works for chiropractic. Our guest today is our own Christy Hudson. Christy's a certified professional compliance officer and serves as the vice president of business relationships at ChiroHealth USA. With over 15 years experience, she's dedicated to educating chiropractors and chiropractic assistants on establishing profitable discount strategies and compliant financial policies. But Christy's impact doesn't stop there. She's also the vice chair of the Chiropractic Future Strategic Plan, where she contributes her expertise to shape the future of the chiropractic profession. Additionally, Christy serves as a board member of the Chiro Congress Cares, highlighting her commitment to the well-being of the chiropractic community. Today, we're going to get some insights on compliance, financial policies, and her efforts to drive the profession forward. But before we get started, I have to tell you how I feel about this young lady. From hiring her from Craigslist on a Sunday night and her starting work the next morning, to processing credit cards in the early days of ChiroHealth USA, to seeing her take on every task in the evolution of her company, to speaking nationally and recently internationally, I really couldn't be more proud of her. She's been my right hand along the way, and many days, both hands. I've pushed her, prodded her, and almost fired her a few times, and I've learned from her. I've learned the importance of helping people see not just who they are, but who they can be and who they can become. I always said I needed a clone. Little did I know my clone would wear a skirt. So welcome, Christy.
Oh, my goodness. Whew, that was an emotional introduction.
Well, it's from the heart. So my first question, when's the last time you've been on Craigslist?
Probably not since the day I applied for a job.
That's a good thing. My job is to help keep you off of Craigslist. So did you have any idea what you were getting into when you came to work for me?
Not a clue. I had taken a break from working and stayed at home I was a stay-at-home mom for like 9 months when I realized that I just needed something more, that I needed to be in the workforce. And the first thing I did was go to Craigslist, which I have no idea. It was the very first time I'd ever even been on Craigslist. I applied for a job that had been posted for less than 5 minutes. And when I took the job, my thought was, I need to figure out what I want to be when I grow up, because I don't know what that is. And it didn't take very long for me to realize that this profession, wherever it was going to take me, was what I was going to be when I grew up.
Yeah. So seeing you become the person you are today, I can't help but feel like your prior employer really lost out. I think all employers can learn from good employees who leave. So what made you want to leave your prior job?
Oh, I think it was a combination of burnout. It was mentally trying, dealing with people in property management. I don't know that we necessarily had great management at that or leadership. Working at ChiroHealth and working for you was completely different than anything I had ever experienced in my life. Everybody has limiting beliefs about what they can and can't accomplish. When working for you, I realized that my limiting beliefs were getting in the way between me and what I could do, because in your eyes, there were no limitations. The example I use to people all the time is, I mean, I was the very first full-time employee outside of you and Melanie. And when we started going to events, there was no one else to go, so you had to take me, which, bless your heart, I was so terrified and so shy that I would hide behind the booth. People had to talk to me for me to talk to them. And it, you know, I don't know, I probably worked 2 or 3 years for you. And I was like, you were like, what do you want to do? And I was like, I want to speak on a stage. I can't talk to people in a booth, but I'm going to stand on a stage and I'm going to teach people. And rather than look at me like I had 3 heads and tell me that was crazy because I could barely talk to people one-on-one, you were like, great, how do we do that? And, you know, you sent me to boot camps and things to help me get over my fear of speaking. It never goes away. I'm always afraid. But, and it opened up so much in my life to realizing that it doesn't matter what you're afraid of or what you're fearful of, is that if you just face it head on, there are no limits to what you can accomplish. And you basically said, there are no limitations. What can you do? What do you want to do? Where do you want to go? And that's a huge empowering.
Well, I appreciate that. So here's the next one. Where have I screwed up along the way? Because I know I have.
Oh my goodness.
You know, this is a safe space. That's our culture at Cairo Health. So be real.
I mean, you know, I don't know. It's really funny. Every now and then you say, I'm trying to be helpful, but I'm probably screwing this up. Because I think we do have that open culture at Cairo Health USA, and then that accountability factor. And it doesn't just flow downhill. It flows all over. So if somebody screws up, you can say, hey, you know, but I don't know that I can think of anything right off the top of my head. Lord knows we have disagreed on some stuff, which I find wildly entertaining.
Well, it's been a few days you wanted to fire me, right?
Well, I mean, that's the best story ever, to be honest, where we weren't really sure, did I quit or was I fired? And we went to lunch to try to figure out what that really was. But, you know, I think that's an incredible thing to be able to work at a company where you can tell the owner, I think you messed up. I think you made I don't agree with your decision, and it's a safe space and we can talk it out. Because like I said, there are times when we don't agree on things, but we have a conversation about it. And sometimes we do it your way. And sometimes we do it my way. And, you know, but to me, those are like the best conversations because we're very open about going into something. I mean, even recently, we were talking about different events and things to do. And you and I were on different sides of like, should we do this? Should we not do this? And it's a compromise in working together. And ultimately, that's what benefits the doctors we serve, their patients, their employees, and now our team.
So as you know, we interact with a lot of companies in the profession. I'm always getting compliments on our team, their passion, their loyalty. What do you think creates this type of culture, and how can our doctors maybe create that in their practices?
Oh, I love that. You know, one of our core values is face each day with passion and enthusiasm. It's my favorite, probably gets me in the most trouble. But I think there's a lot of things that factor into that. One, it's incredibly empowering to work for an organization where everybody is very supportive, that you do have that level of accountability, open, honest communication within the company. And I think the other aspect of that is it's just the profession itself. I mean, it's an incredible blessing every day to go to work and love the work that you do, to love the people you serve. I know so many people in my life who hate their jobs. It's almost like they're doing this countdown to retirement. And I have told you for years, and many people have within our company, that if something happened and we couldn't get paid tomorrow, we would all show up to work because we love what we do, that we would do it for free. I'm glad I don't have to do it for free, but we love what we do so much. And I think a lot of that comes from you, especially. You know, our company never gets so big that you don't know every single person that works for you. And I don't mean just what they do within your company and the job that they do, but who they are on a personal level. You know our families. Heck, you stop by our house when you're out running errands just to drop something off or to say hi. So we have a very unique relationship with the owner of the company that a lot of people don't have access to, you know, and I think that's huge.
So you've interacted with literally thousands of CAs and chiropractors. What do you think most CAs want from their employer to make their position not just a job, but really a career?
I think that appreciation goes a long way. And I mean heartfelt appreciation and understanding for the work that they do. The first 9 months that I worked for you was in your office. And that's an eye-opening experience to realize that what everybody is juggling, the amount of stress that they're under, and all of the different things that they handle. And the bottom line is, for doctors, you need to understand you couldn't do what you do without them doing what they do. And if you had to be the person to answer your phone, set appointments, collect payments, heck, do the billing, you'd probably quit. I think that a lot of them feel underappreciated, undervalued. And the other thing I think that goes a long way too is investing in their future and making it feel like a career, not just a job. This was never just a job for me. You made it perfectly clear that there was a career opportunity, and that the sky was the limit. And we kind of created what that looked like over the years. And I think you can do that within a chiropractic office too. They're underutilizing the talent that they have available. And a lot of that, it just starts with appreciation.
Yeah. I will reiterate, if I can say that word properly. it really is important for us to see people for who they can become, not just who they are when you hire them. I've interacted with so many doctors over the years that it's almost an us versus them with the employees. And, you know, if you take care of your people, they will take care of your practice and you. And, you know, it frustrates me to hear chiropractors talk about, well, I let three CAs go. And I've said this on several podcasts. You're an idiot. You know, the reality is, if you're having to let that many people go, as was said in the book, when you think the problem's out there, that is the problem. You know, we're the ones that hire people. We're the ones that are supposed to train them. And if we don't own that and groom them and get them where they should be, well, that's really on us. You're going to go through an awful lot of CAs unless we look at what our responsibility is in that. And I will tell you, it brings you tremendous stability and peace of mind to know that you got the right people in the right seats doing the right thing. So
I totally agree. And I was going to say, I think it starts with too, that they need to stop looking at their team as an expense. They're an investment.
They are, absolutely are. The best investment I've ever made has been in my team members, no doubt about it. So in the early days, you helped train almost all of our doctors and their teams on how to implement CHUSA. What's the one thing that you wish doctors would do differently to improve their practices?
Oh, well, I think, too, it starts with valuing the people that they have working within their practices, because the bottom line is this: you will accomplish nothing, implement nothing, improve nothing within a practice if you don't have team buy-in. And they already feel overwhelmed, frustrated, and slightly, probably a little bit irritated. Or, you know, so you're going to throw something else on them when they already feel overwhelmed. And regular team meetings, connect with them, communicate with them, really communicate with them and talk to them about what's going on in the practice. What are your practice goals? You may own the business, but you will never accomplish your goals if they don't know where you're going. And let them help you get there. Let them feel a sense of ownership. I think that's huge. We all feel a strong sense of ownership within CHUSA. I tell you all the time, I might not have been here when you started it from day one, but I feel like I helped birth this baby.
You know, I read, I think it was Simon Sinek. Actually, I think it was something he said when we heard him at Parker. He said, if you want people to take responsibility, give it to them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that they truly have to feel like, excuse me, like they own it. And it is empowering. Some of us are control freaks and we have trouble letting go. But one of the things that we're a fan of is the book called Traction, the Entrepreneurial Operating System. And one of the key things in there is to delegate and elevate, which means anytime your hands aren't spent on patients, it's costing you money. And so surround yourself with the right people that can take care of all of those things. And you'll end up with an amazing team. So I know we've discussed on many occasions our frustration with some of our doctors not really valuing their services. You know, I don't know if it's the student poverty mentality that you know, creeps into their mind and extends into their professional career. But what are some of the stories that you've heard from doctors who have some resistance on raising their fees?
They have this deep-seated fear that if they raise their fees even by a dollar, they're going to lose their patients. I think there's a huge fear of rejection from new patients. You know, it's they're already having trouble collecting in the office. So there's a number of reasons why they struggle with it. I think the other part of it is they're not really sure what their fee should be to begin with. You know, it's nobody ever told them what resources to utilize to be able to know what is market value and how to determine that. There's a lot of aspects with that. Knowing your cost of doing business, what is your break-even point, how to read and understand a contract from an insurance company, all of those things that factor into it. A lot of times when we talk to them, they have no idea where their revenue is coming from, where their referrals are coming from, how much they're actually making, what is that cost of doing business. And it creates a lot of unnecessary stress and anxiety in a practice.
Yep, no doubt about it. You know, one of the things that we found along the way in doing some surveys and things was we had a large group that was with ChiroHealth USA, and we did, since we have access to their fee schedules, we know what they're charging. And, you know, don't take this message the wrong way. I'm not saying jack your fees up where nobody can afford it. But doctors, if you don't have a successful practice, you can't help anyone. Your doors are going to close. And so you owe it to your patients to make sure that you're profitable. And what was really an eye-opener for me was there are a number of states who have published workers' comp and published personal injury fee schedules. And we actually did a sample of a number of clinics in a particular state, and it blew my mind to realize that literally 90-something percent of the doctors were not even charging what workers' comp allowed or the PI fee schedule allowed. And so if you're in a state that has a published fee schedule like that, you know, I'm not telling you what to charge. We don't do that. But shouldn't you be paid at least what they think you're worth? And I'll say even more. And the reality is, if you do it the right way, when we talk about that profitable discount strategy, you know, doctors will often say, well, I don't like offering discounts. Well, buddy, if you're part of Blue Cross Aetna and Cigna, you're already offering discounts. But if you have a profitable discount strategy, it lets you get paid well when insurance is available, like a PI or a comp, if you got a good paying insurance company. And you don't sacrifice those patients that might not be able to afford it if you're using a model like we do under ChiroHealth USA. So, I mean, I'm not promoting I'm promoting what we do so you can get paid better and take better care of your family and your patients. So there it is.
Well, so, I was going to say, one of the examples that I give people all the time is that, you know, right before big events and things, I'll go get a manicure and pedicure that costs like $75 to $100. You know, nail technician didn't go to school and pay $100,000+ to be able to do my nails. And yet most chiropractors don't even charge what a nail technician charges. And they know good and well the patient's walking into their office with their Starbucks and their Stanley cup, have their nails done, and you were worried about raising your fees $1, $5. I mean, a $5 increase on average, just a $5 increase on your average visit is the equivalent of 13 months of revenue in a 12-month period of time. You saw no more patients, did no more additional work. You just made that much more money.
Yep. Yep. Get over it. Suck it up, docs.
Suck it up.
So you've also interacted with a lot of chiropractic students as part of your role as the administrator of the ChiroHealth USA Foxworth Family Scholarship. What are a few things you want new doctors coming into the profession to know to be successful?
Oh, be patient. You cannot grow a practice overnight, but be patient. You do not have to have all of the bells and whistles and have this state-of-the-art chiropractic office when you open your doors. You learned the most important thing while you were in school, and that was how to treat patients. So you got to start small and dream big and just stay steady. And don't offer crazy $15 new patient visits on social media.
Yeah, that's a story for another day. So tell everybody how the Foxworth Family Scholarship got started. It's your fault.
It is. I was at an event, maybe at a school, and I was talking to students, and I did not know how much chiropractic school cost at the time. And a lot of the students were talking about how much student loans they were going to owe when they graduated. And there were not a lot of chiropractic scholarships for school. And so when I came back, I was just heartbroken thinking all of these students have all of this debt. And I was like, can we just do a small scholarship? Like just to start, maybe $1,000, because it wasn't a lot, but it would at least help offset some of their costs. And then you were like, well, we could do 1,000, and then brainstorming 20 minutes later, it went from 1,000 to 20,000 to one student. And we did it the first year, and then we upped it to 25,000 the next year. So 10,000 goes towards their tuition. And whether they're on quarters or trimesters, it would cover almost a trimester and it would cover a quarter. $5,000 in cash, which you like to call beer and pizza money, but it's to offset their living expenses, any additional training, education. Maybe one of our students bought their first table with that money. And then we do a $10,000 donation to the school. And it's so cool is that so many schools, Palmer used it to finish funding their endowment that would fund scholarships well into the future. One school, Sherman, they updated all of their treatment rooms in the student clinic. In fact, they wanted to name the one of the rooms after Cairo Health USA, but we elected to name it after the student who won the scholarship's parents, who were board members and had attended school there, and have had huge leadership impact on the profession. So it's been really interesting to see how all that money's been utilized. The 5,000 from the students, the 10,000 to the school, and how it's just continuing to give, give, and give. And the number of scholarships that have opened up in the chiropractic profession, even since we started that, has grown by so much. And it just makes my heart so happy.
Yep. So for those students that might be listening, how do they apply for that? And when can they start applying?
So the scholarship application opens September 1st of every year, and closes on March 30th of every year. So you go to www.chusascholar.com, or you can go to coverhealthusa.com and click on student.
Good deal. And just out of curiosity, how many students do we have apply this past year? And also I want to point out that if you're in your first year, second or third year, you can apply year after year. So it's not just a one shot at it. So be sure and do that. So how many students have we, boy, when we started, what were the numbers and what are they now?
I think the very first year that we did it, we had a little over 100 students who applied. This year, we had over 600 students who applied. And the number continues to grow every single year as more and more colleges are helping us to promote it. Attending the ACC RAC conference has helped us. And but the college presidents have been super incredible in helping us to get the word out, and the deans of the colleges and inviting me to speak and meet with the students and talk to them about these scholarship opportunities.
Good deal. Let's shift gears for a moment. You're involved at almost every level of the profession, from literally dealing with students to most recently the vice chair of the Chiropractic Future Strategic Plan. Boy, that's a mouthful. Something we've been involved in from the start. And I regretfully say you're more passionate about this profession than some chiropractors. What is it that drives you to see this profession improve?
I think there is, but figuring out what I wanted to be when I grew up, although, who knows what that's really going to be. It's going to be within this profession. But I have benefited, every aspect of my life has been touched by chiropractic, either from being a patient, my children being patients, working at Cairo Health, just being involved in the profession. And there are no words to say that how much it has impacted me, how much it has inspired me. I mean, it's been this incredible 15-year journey, which doesn't even feel like 15 years. And so chiropractic gives so much to me on a personal level and a professional level. And so I think it would be very selfish of me not to give back and to help others see the beauty of that. I used to get really upset in the early days when somebody would say something on Facebook about they were having some kind of issue. And I would say, "Have you thought about seeing a chiropractor?" And you would get like hammered from 10 different people about how they needed to go see a medical doctor. And I used to take it personally. Now, 15 years later, we don't really have that happen as much. In fact, I'm not the only person who recommends a chiropractor. So the more that we can educate the public and educate and get more research out there and help more students have access to affordable education to become chiropractors, every bit of that is helping to give back to the chiropractic profession. And because of that profession, I have this incredible, incredible job and career.
So let's kind of wrap up by talking about one of our favorite subjects, traction. I mentioned it earlier, the EOS, or the Entrepreneurial Operating System for running a business, which allows owners to, as they talk about in the EOS life, do the work they love with the people they love, be more profitable, and still have a life. Boy, that's a challenge. You experienced life with Cairo Health before traction and after. What's different? And what recommend? Why would you recommend doctors implement traction in their practice? So tell the horror stories, Christy.
Well, I'm going to tell you that the accountability factor is a huge one in the communication factor. It's really interesting what we silo and what we hang on to a lot of times where you and I were the guiltiest of all. We traveled together and we were together all the time and we would have a brilliant idea on a plane on our way to somewhere. And then we would implement it and we would tell no one else what we had decided to do.
Well, early on, there was just us.
Well, just us, right? And then we started adding more people. And I think sometimes we forgot that it impacted other people. And then next thing you know, we would get an email or a phone call and they'd be like, hey, somebody just called us about this thing that we're doing. And we're like, oh, yeah. Like, it's totally been in the works for 3 months. But then we just wreaked havoc in an entire group of a whole team who's now responsible for managing this project that we forgot to tell them about. But it's little things. And I will say that the traction process is difficult. It's not difficult. It was mentally hard. Change is hard. I'm a big fan of change in theory. But when we implemented traction, those first 2 years were so difficult because it was very much ingrained to me to only talk to you and communicate with you and work with you. And then having to change how we did that. The accountability factor of everybody having to weigh in and say something about what we were working on was different too, because before we just decided those things between ourselves. There were a lot of other things that factored into that. And those first 2 years were really, really, really hard. But the other aspect too that I love about traction is right people, right seat, because you work with people and you think this is the job that they should do. And that was part of my issue, is that everybody had an idea of what job I should be doing. And I hated it. I hated it. It was soul crushing work at the time that I was doing. And it wasn't where my heart and soul was and what I loved doing at Cover Health, which is how I almost got fired, or maybe I almost quit or whatever happened. But because we had traction, because maybe if we didn't, I wouldn't be here today. But because we had traction, it opened up a whole new conversation about what does that look like? What are your strengths and how can we utilize that? And we created a whole new job for me with a whole business, like a job title that nobody had ever heard of that we made up at lunch.
Yep. I was tempted to make you director of bright and shiny objects. Because no matter which turn we took, if it was a bright, shiny object, boy, there you went and you just poured yourself into it.
Saw anybody who loved a software change as much as I did.
That's crazy. You know, and Docs, I'll share with you that the importance of that right person in the right seat doing the right things. And, you know, the reality is when you hire someone, you think you know what they're going to be doing. But if they don't work out in that position, that doesn't mean you need to fire that person. Maybe you need to look and see with this person's skills, with their attitude, with the way they bring themselves to work, where would they really shine? Because there's nothing more costly than turnover in your practice, the distractions that it causes, going through the hiring process, all of those things. So again, I'll reiterate, don't always see people for who they are today, but who they can come, who they can become, because you may have a gem right there, you know, in someone that you think may not make it. Maybe you need to think about them in a little bit, little different role. That has certainly paid off well for us. Christy, is there anything else you want to talk about today?
I don't know. I will say that I am so grateful that I applied for a job on Craigslist, that I got to work for somebody who saw what I could be, and that person was completely foreign to me. There are so many things that I get to do today that sometimes I just want to pinch myself. My mom actually mentioned the other day that when I was like 8 or 9 years old, I told her I was going to be a world traveler. I was going to see the world. And she told me you couldn't major in that in college. And she was right. You couldn't major in that in college, but you can apply for a job on Craigslist that will take you all over the world, that you can overcome your fears and do some pretty incredible things. When I think about all the things that and experiences and the people that I could have missed out on had I not applied for that job. You know, we always talk about like it was just meant to be. Like the stars aligned, it was meant to be. We didn't know what it looked like then, and who knows what it'll look like 10 years from now, but this has been the most incredible journey of my life, and I am so grateful.
And it's not over yet. So I got a couple of just for fun questions. Who's your hero and why?
Oh, let's see. I have a couple. My mom, she worked a corporate job for 30 years, 20, 30 years to take care of her family. And then when her family was long gone and independent, she decided she was going to do what she really wanted to do. And she went from being a vice president of a bank to being a hypnotherapist and started her own
Wow.
holistic wellness clinic. And I think it takes a lot of guts in your 60s to say, I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm going to do what makes me happy.
Well, kudos to her. What talent do you have that most people don't know about?
Well, I am an incredible baker. I can say that. I'm all about
That's
the
for sure.
pretty. That's my happy place, is baking pretty cakes.
What's the worst job you ever had?
Oh, that is easy, without a shadow of a doubt. When I was 16 years old, I worked at a daycare for 3 whole weeks. I love children. I love kids. They're fantastic. Working at a daycare is terrible. And I worked there for 3 weeks because it took me 1 week to figure out that I hated the job. And 2 weeks, I had to turn in my notice so I could go on to something
Well,
else.
what do you think your superpower is?
Being shy has its benefits. It makes me a really good listener. And I retain a lot of what seems like useless information or nonsensical information, but, not talking a lot and being very, very shy. I learned a lot about this profession very early on. And because I'm a good listener, people tell me stuff that I will take to my grave.
And the last one, what's your spirit animal? And don't say the rubber chicken that travels with our booth.
Would never say that. I hate that chicken. I hate that chicken. And please don't send me any more chicken stuff, people. I have chicken pillows, chicken coffee cups, all kinds of stuff that people keep sending me. But I would say that my spirit animal is maybe a dragonfly for the same reason that Kim's is a turkey, which makes me laugh. But if I walk outside, they just kind of swarm and they like to land on my hands, and I love them.
Well, thanks for spending some time with us today, Christy, and thank you all for listening to the Chirosphere podcast. Please subscribe and share the podcast with your friends and let us know who you'd like to hear from in the future, and we'll try to get them on. If you want to learn more about ChiroHealth USA and how we can help you develop a profitable discount strategy that will grow your practice, increase your income, and more importantly, your profitability, call us at 888-719-9990 or visit our website at chirohealthusa.com to find out why ChiroHealth USA is the network that works for chiropractic and you.